existence. I've got very excited when Mom Kelly spoke and said the other day, she said, are we taking economic development to the people, or what are we doing about it? And today is a follow-up meeting, and I'm very glad we are where we are now. So thank you for organizing this meeting. When I look at the BBBE Act, I'm wondering whether black empowerment is really what we need for economic development in South Africa. Because we have seen in the Western Cape that the minute you throw out the preconditions of black empowerment in tenders, like they have done in the city of Cape Town, you push up your opportunities for seriously disadvantaged people by 70%. So I'm not so sure that we're going down the right track. I'm not saying do not empower black people. I am not saying only empower black people. But we also have brown people, and we have pink people, and we have yellow people. They all need empowerment. But most of all, our economy needs empower. Our economy needs empowerment. You know where I come from in the eastern, western part of the Eastern Cape, I cannot use the term colored, I must say brown. I got very excited when NASCOP started talking, because then we got down to real business. And I think that is what we should look at when we want to do business and when we want to do economic development. And I hope that every single point made by NASCOP will be taken cognizance of here today, and that it will be clearly recorded, because that is opening up business. That will create the opportunities for the people. And we should bend over backwards and follow on the business opportunities that they're talking about, because that's the only way we should be going, and not be bound by a system that's not working, that's not delivering in the end. You see, with BEE, and I have a problem, because my colleagues are saying it is not getting to the people in the Northern Cape. I have a problem saying it is not getting to the people on the ground. And that's what we've got to look at. Over lunch we were talking, and they said the BBBE Act was never there to be a redistribution exercise. It was there, put there to develop business. And if you want to look at redistribution, you must look at something totally different. I totally agree with the gentleman that I had lunch with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think we do need to let people in the parliament. Because there are people that have been with us for a very long time. Now we try to remember the next Karelind, and she talked about the doing away with black empowerment priority, or that care of the case. We create the opportunities for black opportunities. I would like to see that study going on to conduct it. Our chairperson might come up with a point. Let me find out from NAPCOC. Whether they ever taken any initiatives to venture outside of Africa. If so, what support do they get from the GI? I can understand perhaps from the GSI, because there was a study conducted by the State of Africa about 3 years ago, where they indicated, or they found out that 25% speech, outside this meeting, one another would be called there. The CEO of any health utility. NAPCO can voice that, rather complain that they don't have access to CEOs of the device. I just want to find out, check it down by the internet issue. Whether, how do they prioritize their accessibility as far as the black people is concerned, so the base damage is the blessing of the name of the black people. Now, how do they prioritize the accessibility of which identity should be key when they want to use it? Or you want to take a product to the public in general. More especially if they have to venture outside of Africa, but it's only to make sure that or to contact that you can only venture out of now. They are not accessible to people for now. Well, they might not have time to be accessible. My last point, Chairperson, is on NAPCO, whether as they see that there is a black economic empowerment and they seem to be missing the goal or they're not part of the world this 15, what initiatives have they taken? So, or they, are they taking to make sure that they, also the smallest settlement in townships, being a prison, in Chabay, in Mlad, they got all the opportunities that one day they could be able to complain.
Number 10, keep up on number 10.
Thank you so much, Chair. Let me sit here and I want to echo my colleagues in the National Library Community Scholars because this is really completely, I'm sitting here, I'm not sure about I'm black or I'm brown or I'm yellow. Therefore, that I'm really wishing that if we do have some specific cross one stage, when we can all talk about learning and ability of that. And then to see through all this presentation, really, I can feel there's a lot of willingness of all the CFI, which is willing to help and all that. But the reality is that the people on the grassroots are still calling me and they won't be able to get the financing for this and all that. So my question here is, I want to know, if all our different CFI, do they compete against themselves? For example, like IDC, pre-editor, whatever, different entities. And those are the small business people approach to. And then also we need to think about what is the obstacle for all the small business people when they're seeking for this financial assistance. It's because they're not like this. When you go and apply the loan or ask for the help from the bank, you always first of all receive a big document. And that really scares us as a people. They really don't know how to apply and or how to ask for the help. Although our NEA mentioned about it, the mentorship, but I'd like to know what label of the mentorship which are we applying to. Because some of our gentlemen talking about on the grassroots of our business and entrepreneurs, they don't have much of the knowledge of how to start a business. They need someone to guide them and to hold them in their hand and to help them to develop into and to identify the potential to so really I think this is the area where all our UPI need to think about what is the real need of our SMEs and need for. And then we create special division or someone to help them with that. And then through there I think that we'll be able to achieve what part of our deputy minister is thinking about. This is how we can implement all the policies and to achieve our goals.
I'll give it to NAPCO, then to
Honorable Nambi is a good chef to ask a question, but you said I'm going to ask a decent answer.
commissioner court either to confirm in a little bit of elaboration that I strongly feel that at times we make a mistake by generalizing. He was making a very good point, but I don't think this thing of civil court is applicable to all of them, though it might be that it's a majority, those that are civil court. So at times we make even those relative few that are already available to think that just because you're using that left brush to deal with all of them like that. So I strongly felt, Chairperson, that Mugune Sachi, but if we can confirm that of course we do have related fields that are always available, but it can be true that all of them, when we started here, we highlighted some of those that some of us were the same experience I had, but we still have things, even though they are minority. But if we are using a general statement, at times it can lose the strategic meaning of the entire point that I was trying to understand. So that is that. The second one is linked to what was said about this institution assisting people from outside, where they touch the issue of Swaziland as an example, then NEF, if they can take us through how they give you those outside, if they happen to have a situation where you have people from inside the country making the same application, is the treatment the same, or when you go outside you apply different rules all together? That is my suggestion.
I agree with you on our rules, but you will remember any type of discussion of apply the same rules. I'm forced to give it, but I'll tell you tomorrow why I really want to give it up to you. But you can see.
Chair? No, thank you, Chair.
I have a strong question, Chair, for the years that you've spoken this tomorrow.
Chair, on a point of honor, I'm not yet a member of the year.
But you're making a mistake by saying you're not yet.
I don't have a question, I just want to make a comment. And my comment goes to what Mr. Bell said before we pray for us. I think, Chair, it's a serious challenge of them to receive the members of Parliament and the financial institution. And that challenge, we must take it seriously. If NAFCO can come to such a forum like this and make a statement in their presentation concerning black entrepreneurs, if that is the future, then government really needs to make a difference. Because it's unacceptable, Chair, that black people in this country who were the victims of apartheid, and up until today, they are still victims, they are still suffering under laws that have been made and laws that they are trying to change, and yet black people are suffering. Economically, it's unacceptable. So all I want to say, Chair, we must take this thing very, very seriously. And we need to have a meeting where the minister can speak to these things. Because it's not fair helping people on the other line while the children are suffering here. I can't give bread to to Nambi's children, and my children are hungry. You're not a good father. You're a bad father. That's my convention, and I thank you.
Maybe with us, it's because of the fact that we are both
scared of your support.
Yeah.
Because
to find that 66% of all mine is going to parliament of the civil portion in the government place, and only 44% is being left out. So we are, those are the increases to our honesty. And also, of course, a fund, which we call a property fund in Singapore. You know, we're not really managing, you know, to help our people for now. We are going to redo all the township businesses. Some of them, you know, if you look at the former retail stores, you know, in Mankalo and Sons, they are nowhere now. We want to rebuild them, to help our members to rebuild them. Because we find an old lady having great rent and she spends 30 grand to go to town to buy in Bukit Sebenman, the rest of the one, a shop next door where she could go there. Mm-hmm. So we're also helping the township and businesses to come up. So those are the initiatives we're doing for our
request a member of Parliament to resolve on this in the election. Thank you.
Thank you.
all of our stakeholders. And NACCO for us was one of the key stakeholders. I remember that when we were in the process of finalizing the act, the BEE strategy, the code of good practice, NACCO was part of that process. So I don't want to go back, you know, to the definition of what constitutes broad-based economic empowerment and what does not, because they were actually part of that whole process. For me, enterprise development of black enterprises, the ownership aspect of empowerment and all of the area skills development are supposed to be part of the empowerment initiative. So I want to get involved in that today. But Chairperson, and honorable MC, I was just sitting and listening here, and I was thinking, I'm usually a doer, I'm not a talker. So if you were to give me a task, I would actually make it a point that I take that task and run with it. So, but I just felt that I had to respond to this because I don't believe it's actually fair or business either. And there was an initiative that we involved with together with NACCO. It must have been a few months ago, correctly. And I think in the whole country, it's actually very rare where you find a situation where, for instance, an organization which feels that maybe one of our stakeholders will come and engage with all of my senior managers and all of my executive directors. We organized a workshop with NACCO where we're taking them through our product offering on our strategic plan because we actually believe that it was important for the NACCO leadership to understand the NAS value because we have to go out, you know, to market our initiatives, but we believe that we have to do this in partnership with NACCO. It was a half-day session with them where they presented, we presented. We identified synergies between the two organizations. We identified possibilities for investment opportunities on both sides. And I have to say this, that what happened after that meeting for us, which was a real nightmare, in that if you sit in a session like this, half a day with your whole executive team, that's what be expecting to get back, even if it was maybe four or five of the things that we had identified, for us it would have been a huge achievement. So when we're trying to go back to NACCO now, they would be pushing us from pillar to post. We're never really able to get to the real person. And we're saying, are these the same people we were having this discussion with? But I'm saying there's water under the bridge now. I have to, you know, to confess that each time I saw something from NACCO, I wasn't interested. Because for me and my relatives, we're looking at it as a waste of time. If you sit for so many hours and you're not able to concretely say that these are the opportunities that emanated from that particular discussion. So I'm saying we are now willing to go back to the negotiating table and see how we can actually resolve some of those issues. But there has been an attempt from our side to work and cooperate with NACCO. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At least one achievement that we have on this meeting is that we hope that we appreciate it and talk about the service of the finalize, which is something good which you thought. How can you help me? How can you help us?
Honorable Chairman, President, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members of the South African Parliament, business leaders, and my fellow banking leaders, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm very proud and privileged to participate in this forum. I think it's a fantastic idea. Well done and congratulations. And I'm sure it will not be the last one of these. I'm sure we'll have a follow-up on this because I've learned a lot this morning. I think it's been very interesting about how the financial institutions, the South African companies, conducting business in Africa and elsewhere. So that is what we're going to try and address this afternoon. To address that question, I put an agenda together, and this is what I would like to discuss. Just a little bit about our group. And I think it's very important that we understand the South African trade landscape. There's been major changes and major shifts in the South African trade landscape, and I think players such as ourselves, players such as the government, need to understand this to determine what is the best way forward. Not only has there been economic shifts, but there's also been a huge political shift from the West to the emerging markets to the eastern part of the world, and I think that influenced substantially how we conduct business and how we make it successful, assisting our companies to excel in the international arena. After that, I would like to talk a little bit about our group. How do we actually try and assist our clients in this space? Obviously, we're a local South African bank and we don't have a presence around the world, but we would like to talk about how do we help people where we have a non-presence, and certainly also focus on where we have a presence. Then we'll talk briefly about our services. I can only do that briefly because time won't allow us to go into detail, and some concluding remarks and from what I heard this morning, we're certainly going to have a lot of questions. So let's go on. That's the First Rand Group. First Rand is the listed entity. In the group, in the middle, is a banking entity, and that's really what I'm going to focus on. FNB Africa, FNB International are all out in the First Rand Bank Holdings company. The three big trade names that's in that business is FNB, which is the commercial banking arm, RMB, Rand and Bank, which is the investment banking arm, and the US Bank, which is the real bank. The same as always, how does the US Bank help you? They take, how do they get you on your feet? They take your wheels away from you. So hopefully we're not going to talk about that as well. And then I want to talk a little bit about global transactional services that we are working. I'm from our global transactional service division here in the West Cape, looking after the West Cape province, located here in Cape Town. Although I'm located here in Cape Town, but I'm in position to say from a national point of view, it's not a province point of view. Let's look at the trade. And sort of looking at the picture over a decade. And if you look at where the big shift happened, Africa and Asia, that's really where the big shift came in. If you look at the percentages for Asia, look at the percentages for Africa, I mean, over the last decade, there's a huge movement to Asia, a huge movement to Africa as well. And we had actually declined the dark brown line, really the European Union, our traditional market. Quite a busy slide, lots of numbers, but really what I want to emphasize here, you can see there's definitely been a huge shift to the east. And I think that influenced how we move forward. Remember, South Africa is an open economy, and more than 50% of contributions to the economy comes from trade. So it's important that we understand as well. Well, this is also a lot of detail, but I want to focus on two parts there, really. It's China. Less than a decade ago, China was our 28th biggest trading partner. China is our biggest trading partner in terms of exports today. On that side, imports, China was number 7. A decade ago, our biggest trading partner today. Other countries that have also grown substantially is India. 19, now number 7. So really, there's been a huge shift to that part of the continent. National Bank, since maybe it's interesting statistics, I don't know the exact numbers, but more or less the numbers is the hour you had lunch, approximately 300 babies were born in the USA, approximately 1,800 in China, and about 3,200 in India. So that's where your future market. That's just a geographical split of what I'm really trying to emphasize here. Again, about 10 years ago, that's our business. Exports, imports, more than 40% was in the EU. Very little on this side in terms of value. Very little on that side in Africa, on the African continent. Again, it's really just explaining the same figure or the same concept here. Huge movement towards far So that has really influenced the way that the our group is looking at doing business and helping our clients in the export and import business. Our footprint, where we don't have a presence, the whole world. We do have correspondent banking relationships with numerous banks all over the world, so we are of the opinion that we can support clients with an export or import anywhere in the world. We can support them through our alliances and our relationships with other banks, with other international banks. We have specialists that manage the relationships with our correspondent banks. These people need to ensure there's sufficient credit lines, competitive pricing, and service levels in place so that we can service our clients. Hopefully we, through those relationships, we build up the knowledge of those markets and we can then assist our clients through that side. So we have opportunities to work throughout the world. When we come to our footprint, we're a South African bank. Our emphasis really is CADEX. We're currently in 6 countries on the southern point of Africa. We have identified India and China as major markets. We have a branch in India. We are the first South African bank that opens full branches in India. We have a representative office in China, Ghana, Nigeria. We're certainly looking at opening more offices in Africa, immediate horizon in Tanzania and Nigeria. And we hopefully will move into some of the other countries shortly. The whole idea here is that we actually bank Africa and we try and facilitate the trade flows between the China, the India, Far East, Middle East, and as well as England. We also have branch in London. When we have presence in the country, we believe we have a respected brand. We have the owner-manager culture in our group. I'm sure most people in the group are aware that three of the great entrepreneurs of South Africa created the Third Rand Group. That entrepreneurship owner culture is very much part of our group. We're certainly a dominant player in the SADC region. Where we choose to play, we are a leading bank, not just in terms of the South African space, but in terms of international space. That's what I was alluding to a little bit earlier. This is where we would like to end up sometime in the near future. You will notice from this Africa map that we're not playing the northern space. I think the northern space is very much a different culture, a different religion, well serviced from Europe. So I think it's very difficult for South African companies to play in that space. So we believe our market is really stuck to heart of Africa. On our services, local transactional services, I really just want to briefly touch on this because, I mean, you can have a whole week seminar on discussing this. I mean, what we're really there for is trying to assist the clients with their trade flows and make sure they get paid, so the money flows back to the country and all these kind of good things. I mean, open account payments will carry on with additional partners. Where people have been trading with Europe for many years. We're not saying we're going to stop trading with Europe, but that side of business will continue. But where people move into the new market, maybe a riskier market, unknown market, I mean, the instruments, the documents are there to ensure that people get paid. I think some of the comments this morning was made that trade finance and getting paid is not a possibility. People struggle to get funding from banks. I think there are tools and instruments to actually facilitate and mitigate risk of getting paid out of these countries or out of the country. Likewise, where there's very high risk countries and people trade between third countries, we certainly have such a trade services where people can make these transferable lists of credit, back letters of credit, but all the instruments that are there to facilitate trade and help people to actually put these trade transactions together. So again, I'm of the opinion that banks can assist people to trade across borders. We certainly can help in-country assistance where we are located. And on the investment side, I mean, our clients are moving into African countries cross-border. I mean, these people are looking for cash management, they're looking for liquidity management in different currencies, multiple jurisdictions, and the part of this discussion going forward. I mean, we can look at the historical trade patterns, but I think it's very important that we understand the macroeconomic policies of the government, where new frontiers the government is moving to, so we can be aware of and we can be part of this of those businesses going forward. That's really what I would like to share with you today. I hope you find it useful, and I look forward to some of the questions and answers at a later stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it was by coincidence that in your Manifest Africa, I saw there was an opening on Zimbabwe. In your list of countries, I saw that Zimbabwe is right at the bottom. I will engage with that. Who's coming next? Afra. Transactions, specifically in the production company.
Thank you. stay on the table because they have the investment of projects to make sure that the companies get us to their work. We've done quite a bit of work and we've had them, and we've done quite a bit of work in capital and analysis to make sure they have access to funding for the students who are back to the network. So specific to Africa, specific to the rest of Africa, we need to define and find out what is the need, and then figure out where we need the backing community with the central vector as far as the asking for. We bring it all together. So what the client needs, they need offer to be back to capital, they need all the three as a capital, we have to do it. We are at the level of them. But at the end, at the core, the relationship person needs to come back for the driving that support. That is our real goal. In terms of the corporate operating in Africa, Chairman, the second program that we adopted at Greenfield Center is strictly divided between what we classify as the investment banking program as well as corporate and research investment program. And that ends, from an after-capture perspective, which is the investment banking side, we are strongly advisory. You may be aware that you are part of the group that was advising Barty in the space that you intend to partner with them here in a while ago. You may also be aware that we've been part of many other advisory members for undergoing and others going into the process. So, another question mentioned, you are part of the work of them to be an advisor for your work in. Beyond that, the risk management, from a risk management perspective, obviously, here is roughly has to do with cross currency exposure for countries or companies that are exposed to currencies on the continent. And then I'm going to talk to you about strategy, but I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the right hand side, which is the corporate business management program that we also have those of you who are closer to the heart about what is your interest of not necessarily the major corporations, but what are the four the sector level commercial corporations. For that, we offer a quarter base of a very strong trade finance. We are extremely strong in domestic cash management, and that is done not necessarily through reporting banks, but through our banking network. As I mentioned before, the model system works extremely well. So this is key because the difference between the ordinary process is that we need about the community, the relationship manager, the government corporate remains the part of the national government. So they're in control of the level, the quality of service, that product and company is getting, regardless of where we need the market network, that banking development. The company is operating in Tanzania or Kenya, being backed by partners there. The person who makes sure that they send the right person to the second point of service, the person who is charging the relationship for the product, the person who knows they don't get the right service in terms of their way for the business from that. So you're very cognizant. Let me ask you some of the examples of transactions that we're participating in. We have just operations in Sudan and Zambia, LTM, total number of countries, Zambia, Uganda, Nigeria, FDA, total number of countries as well, and so on and so forth. And as I mentioned, there are a lot more to have a consumer. I think from a, what do you call a business banking perspective, we have again, we do then. What's the new number of either South African corporate? In Tanzania, we were banked to the other corporates, Engen, Ringo, Shopper, Nampa, Robert, and South Sun. And nobody, kind of the same including Bauer, Premier Foods, Business, Monsters, and certainly Namibia, and their corporates, is doing quite a bit of work with after some PKK and others. So, let's go through
brand, moving forward. Russia tells us
in Europe, that your growth is probably sitting within that country. So it is just that a very, very common task to actually take such a challenge. And I would like us to actually put ourselves right in the shoes of a little company, trying to actually grow with it and actually become global. But there's one thing that is everywhere that makes it so important, and yet at the same time, moves to a certain extent. South African law, as well as above, the corporate governance in this country is important, and yet at the same time, our fiscal policy is uncertain. So there is a competitive advantage in all the South African companies. It becomes a little bit easier now to engage, because initially, you have to actually be able to use the map to ponder where you are coming from. Because some of these have a harm. You know, in this country, this is the rule of South Africa. Right now, we have the attention to the platform today. At least we can actually start negotiating at a higher level. If you look at our story, the same thing for us. We are now, we are a global emerging market space, headquartered in downtown Johannesburg, and I'm actually a bit surrounded by it. We've been in this game for almost half a decade. And we can today actually clearly articulate what our strategy is. We are connecting Africa to the world. And the world to Africa. We are full-fledged bank offering personal business, corporate investment banking, here at the same time, managing investment, and offering life insurance. Today, as I speak with you, honorable members, we are in 17 countries in Africa, and our presence is in 15 countries outside South Africa. We found major innovations in key emerging sectors, like the financial institutions, the resources, the commodities, the mining sector, oil and gas, power infrastructure, and transportation. Everyone, the biggest bank in the world, owns 20% of the same. I'm going to talk about that at a later stage, because it is something that has actually benefited, I would say, South African companies in the world. We are the largest banking group in Africa by access to banking. Our market capitalization is sitting at about 105 billion as a sector of Africa. Over the years, we have managed to actually offer 50,000 jobs to humanity. For the far societal problem of the world and South Africa, in South Africa and Africa, and then the rest of the world. We own majority stakes in African and emerging market operations, with an exception of the minority stakes in Florida. This makes a health story. And I would like to share with you that the first branch that we opened outside South Africa, it was in Namibia in 33 years ago. And now we both of 17 countries. We have 7 countries with 2 countries in the rest of us. And where we have this information, we actually try to make sure that we are a full-fledged bank, offering all the various services. We've been a little bit slow and cautious on stock working. But I think we'll get there in some stage.
to be happy. into the open market
education is critical, so the risk education when we combine with one of taking that out of the system, then we will buy it and we will go and sell it to the end users outside of the country. All of us use, and we can see it comes from the Orleans and Bangalore, the same bank, the same products, also claim they have the same time as John will show you. The one thing I want to put is this, why is it important and why do I have somebody's name up here? Trade is the first step that any company takes that is looking at innovation or expanding outside of the borders of this country. So that is why the trade facility is provided is the first step. Step one is also in a South African base, you are exporting before you start investing or setting up a hub, infrastructure, or whatever it is outside of the country. If you think of the right with all of these, and I can give you an example, going to the depot, all of these companies, and there are a lot more of them, will expand outside of the borders of South Africa, starting by producing goods in South Africa, creating jobs here, and then sending them into the rest of Africa, utilizing some of the trade products that all of the banks could potentially offer. In particular, the agricultural sector, we have been supporting smaller businesses like Tamar, Procurus, Crystallize, etc., as they sell their products outside of South Africa. We do the same thing for mining, telecom, and other manufacturing areas as well. On the cross-border payment, what does that mean? It means you sold your product to someone else, you now expect the money needs to be transferred. Banks have extensive networks, Standard Bank in particular, Vince spoke about correspondent banks. Those are banks in other countries in which you don't have a presence, who would be your counterpart who you know you've dealt with, who can help facilitate these payments to South African exporters as to receive payments from countries in which you, for instance, do not have a presence. All these things make the economy worldwide make sure that the money moves in the right place. That is what keeps the economy going, making sure that there's a safe transfer of money back to where it needs to go. We have an extensive link up with IPDC, our primary partner, which enables us to facilitate or to piggyback with some of the systems they are as well that go into the rest of Africa in order to support our clients. Giving out their systems in China, and Linda has helped me here. I think in South Africa, we have in the retail bank, how many clients do we have, Linda? Yeah, I think we have between 7 and 10 million clients in the retail bank in South Africa. In China, IPDC, so they're all the biggest retail banks in China, have over 200 million customers. So it makes our problems with our systems and everything else spread in comparison if you think of them to be rich. We also facilitate importantly foreign direct investment flows and donor flows. There's quite a bit of detail in these few pages. These things are incredibly important as donors or foreign investors invest in other countries or in South Africa and we help facilitate the currency flows which results from all of those. So I think skip to this because I'm worried that the chair is really nodding his head when I hurry up. That is the kind of advisor as a bank. We are fully equipped with a whole host of products. The that is, we are fully equipped to provide those services to our South African children who are looking to invest. If you talk about inter-African investment, we are the bank with the biggest footprint on the African continent. Not only are we the biggest bank out there in the States by market cap on assets, but we're the biggest footprint. When I joined our bank 4.5 years ago, Citibank had the biggest footprint to our Africa in terms of representation. Today, it is done at that. We are proud to say that we can provide the localness of what we need to know, the cultural issue, we understand what it is, because we have our own control group. What is the benefit of investment in another country? I call it the trade cycle starts with only a thing. Because what it means is that once again, the potential to do things there, it creates jobs and infrastructure. But it also means that profits in the form of dividends or other forms of repatriation come back to South Africa. It increases the South African tax rate, which is to the benefit of the entire country. We arrange funding. I think it's fair to say that a lot of these names are common amongst the local banks, but we have provided, either in South Africa or in country, more importantly, we have provided to some of these big names funding in Africa as well as outside of Africa. And I've had some stats to show you that we have supported with more than R1 billion funding to smaller companies from all exporting in areas like mining, agriculture, telecom, and setting up businesses outside of South Africa. We have supported them in that way as well. Important to note that what we do as a bank is that we also try and leverage the liquidity and capital that's available in country for some of our South African services. So it isn't just the South African deposit base that might be able to be used to provide funding to some of these companies that are available. So we will, for instance, if it's used in Nigeria, for instance, we will fund in Nigerian Naira off the balance sheet we have there from that deposit base. Develop the likes of NGM and all those of other countries. We at the same time facilitate infrastructure development, and in a lot of these, South African construction companies are involved. It's a different way of exporting investment if you think about it. You'll have the likes of roof fire and running water, minimal construction. What is it mean? It simply means that profits get infrastructure back to South Africa, and once again, they can create more jobs and lead to the foreign currency. This is probably our last and our most controversial slide. If I may say, what do we need from policymakers? I think you've asked us what we need. You asked us as a bank and the financial institutions, and a particular kind of bank, we're also trying to have gone out and been trying to invest outside of the borders of this country. But can you don't make too many notes or questions or questions? So what do we need? And also, what are we good at? And then there's referred to as Brazil, or she's alluding to it. Our policy making in this country is world-class. I think we have excellent fiscal governance rules for both the public and for the private sector. Transparency is essential to the results. This country has the potential to be the gateway and the hub for all investments in the world of Africa. What we need to take is people to think about things like exchange control. Increasingly, we need people to think about head office for anything for the African businesses in the region. We also need a double taxation agreement which reduces the holding taxes, which could make it incredibly expensive to invest for anyone in the rest of Africa. We need to even move the capital first. We need variables that are clear. Safety and stability, which I think we have achieved in this country, we definitely need more to go forward. The easy movement of human capital, for people to be able to move wherever the business goes. And lastly, visible and odorous moral support for being proud of South Africa, which is Standard Bank, this being our home base. You know, once they asked when I took over something, they asked my old rough at the time of the deputy CEO of the bank. So often, so when is Standard Bank going to list in London? And he made the point, he said, we haven't been able to move from downtown Joburg into Stanford, so the chances that we'll ever get to London are quite remote. So we are proud of South Africa. We are part of the story of a company that's trying to invest beyond these borders. We are perfectly suited to help, and we do help. And I can give you some stats later, as we need to talk about this in the question time.
thank very much for understanding, for time, for sentiment, for rushing you, even though you didn't mention anything about the financial charter.
In 2006,
asking for over 80% of what's driving the GDP in those African countries. Resource being at the top, financial services, trade, agriculture, manufacturing, and government services. So that tells you about where the opportunity will rely and what can we do to make sure that South African entities are really being helped in terms of accessing those opportunities. As a result of this kind of data coming through and whatnot, we have seen quite a few of corporate activities around banks, mergers and acquisitions by banks in order to help and follow through that economic opportunity presented by the continent. Coming to the investment side, where there are mergers and acquisitions, debt capital markets, and also the listing. Active stock market. We find that prominent countries are, you know, handful. Basically, you have South Africa and Nigeria dominating the landscape. So that helps the ease of getting investment in and out of the country. And we seem to have some kind of constraint in terms of ensuring that the, you know, flow of capital investment funds across some of the countries that we do. And we also look into the nature of deals that have been concluded in the continent. We find that the bulk deals that are requiring funding of financial institutions seem to be quite dominant. I think, as my colleagues were presenting, we're almost seeing the same kind of companies being quite cheap. And it still indicates that it's only the bigger companies, corporate opportunities that have been pushed through. And therefore requiring that this participation by almost all the prominent financial institutions in helping and develop those opportunities that might be available. So which means there's still a chunk of that landscape that is not being thoroughly attended to, and basically because of the issues that were, you know, put here as the kind of challenges and constraints that we have to deal with. And with the help of the authorities in South Africa, probably we can do some progress around those issues. Generally, in terms of products that have come through, we do understand through our research that credit is still the dominant product. And therefore, you have the payments, which are quite important to make sure that, you know, when you invest, you know how to invest the ease of investing, but also if there are rewards, able to remit those rewards back to your home base. Trade finance is also important, and as is the forex market. So we just take that landscape because we're coming here to just tell you a little bit of the capacity that we also have. And sorry for the bright color. We regard ourselves, we just changed our mission statement, saying we want to build Africa's most admired bank, which is a relative concept also to say you admire by who, but we in terms of that order, by ourselves as staff of the institution, by the clients that we service, obviously by the shareholders, the regulators because we're operating in a highly regulated environment, and lastly by the communities that we serve. Chairman, we concluded an alliance footprint with EcoBank in 2008. That was following up our venture into the other African countries from 1994 when we made that first step. So currently we have presence that's covering almost 5 countries through that alliance. So we're able to provide the local intelligence as to what are the requirements locally, which are quite important for entities that are venturing into the continent to then understand the nature of risks that they're dealing with, but also how to go about managing those risks. Quite important. As I've indicated, generally you have participation of the bigger companies out of South Africa into the rest of the continent. This is just an example of the CNET. We have a JSE listed company in which basically in their self-driven fashion. This is where we have our full spectrum banking in Swaziland, Lesotho, Namibia, Zimbabwe, and also Malawi with this kind of shareholding basis that we have. I think with the alliance, we're hoping to take that alliance further, which will help us in terms of having the full spectrum offering, both from the alliance side, EcoBank, and ourselves, to ensure that we're able to provide service to properly for that kind of product. I'm happy to say, Chairman, in the main, we actually have seen the respective economy. Because it wouldn't be too prudent for us to say we're just helping South African corporates to venture into the continent. There should be a business right now for us to look into the market first. And we can be a good host for those entities in South Africa that will be coming through. But there should be an economic rationale for us to be in there to ensure that we're facilitating economic development. This is the project that we have conducted in the continent, almost covering from Egypt, you know, across the east to the west, and this will be common to all the banks, because as I indicated, some of these major projects will participate in a platform. Well, this comes to the EcoBank presence, Chairman, nothing to add to this, it just indicates that you know, it's not just a geographical coverage, we do have a local presence through the EcoBank partnership that was developed. I think what's more important is we have instituted the local knowledge office, if you like, that helps to give the right kind of information from visa requirements to other regulatory requirements for entities that are dealing with into other African countries. Nature of support is quite varied. Development of inter-African trade, supporting infrastructure development, and then facilitating also the relationship between South Africa and the rest of the other African countries. The investment banking offering is full spectrum, Chairman, ranging from all the investment banking products, treasury and balance sheet management, and of course the global market. This is quite important for us. As I have indicated, we can't ignore the sectoral focus of our approach to the rest of the African country. So we're looking into those sectors that have the momentum, economic momentum, and actually making a lot of difference those economies. So this is our approach in general. We're looking into the sectors that have potential, resources, power, infrastructure, diversified industrial. And then of course we also respect the local economic development principles in respect to countries that we are present in operation. So as the indigenization programs driven by other countries, we also sensitive to that. China, nevertheless, to make sure that those policies become a success, not compromising the economy of Europe. I think everybody for the strong tools, but I think what we're proud of, being able to provide assistance to people that has absolutely, literally, and otherwise linked Africa to the rest of the world. And we're hoping that through this interconnectivity, we'll be able to, you know, showcase investment opportunities in the rest of the continent. And South Africa and South African companies will be at the forefront in terms of understanding this opportunity. I think that should be within the timeline. Thank you very much.
Now we come to the issue. Thank you very much. Now, our vision for networks to Kenya, because most of the people have been from the financial services. Honorable Mishale, Honorable Nyambi. Many of the questions are associated with the same type of pay. Because
from what was presented by Standard Bank, to be specific, and linked to almost all the other presenters, you can even go to an extent of, in one slide, citing some of those that are assisted. White farmers. And the reality is that if you can go to the historically disadvantaged, you'll have your NAFU, and your NAFU will affiliate to that talk. And there's no way that is being assisted. And that is why we have the challenge that we're having. I'm trying to deal with the part of what is it that we're doing that is wrong. So that is why I'm asking myself, if ever we want to address the time bomb, maybe it's high time that after this one, after this round table, after whatever recommendations that are taking us forward, check something that can be practical, that can be implemented, that will make sure that we address the challenges that we have when taking South Africa, taking Africa, taking the whole world, and at the same time benefiting our own people. Standard Bank, you are quite correct to say what we need from policymakers, but I'll be not doing my task if I don't ask on this one. Your last but one slide, you are saying South African policy making is world class. Then, after that one, what can you do to help us create more jobs and trade investment? Policy certainty and stability. A contradiction of some sort. Or it's how I read it. Because reading this slide, what do you mean if you're saying we are having policies? Policy making is world class, but for us, what you need is policy certainty and stability. Before I can unpack it in my own limited interpretation of this one, maybe give Chairperson, they can take us and elaborate a bit so that we can understand what is the meaning behind this one. Then the last one. I've seen that almost all except F and B, yeah, almost all of them, except F and B and F and B. So the bank, after all of them, you are assisting MTN. And I'm asking myself, very interesting chair to have them in one room. If it was only Standard Bank, who are going to say no, Standard Bank is assisting MTN. And another day you'll have another presentation where you'll have ASA and it will say MTN. But now just because you happen to have all of them in one room, well, there's nothing wrong for them to assist one. But it goes back to what I started when I tried to touch that. With my limited understanding of the challenges facing us as a country, I don't think we'll reach a stage where we can be able to say our people are really benefiting if we have strategic partners, strategic structures that are representing the people who are challenged on a daily basis, and if we're taking issues of development, they are not featuring anywhere. We still have these challenges.
NASCOP said in the earlier presentation, I forgot to raise it when we were talking, but it sort of already fits into this one. They said you can't go to a country without having the list before, otherwise you can't go and make an appointment and set up a deal and so on and so forth. And it's true, I agree with that. And I do firmly believe that new strategies that go overseas exist. tourism and they go without business, and the councillors don't listen when they are told to. It's just a joyride. The trip of the president to China is a very important one, because in a way we've got to get into BRICS, but I want to ask, what is this going to cost us in the end? What do we have to sacrifice to get in there? Because one of the gentlemen that spoke early this morning said there's nothing like a free lunch. I also need to know from Stanley Grant, what is this agreement that they have signed with ICBC entails in terms of the train development, the high speed train, and then the power stations? Because where does the state fit into it? Is it purely a funding thing between the state and the banks advancing the money, or how does it work? I'd like more clarity on that. Thank you.
Oh, I mean, this is the hard question. Yep, still, it's a handy job to do.
I don't find that so with all of them. How much is it done? Or how many tech companies are they supporting? Which should have passed South Africa and removed all the control regulations who could be in Japan, especially now. Now, my question is, why do they need that decision to control regulations? And why do they think that we might actually end up being vulnerable to contagion effects or also to outside the flows, even more? We have seen that if you remove the state control regulations, there's a fear that this continuing failure will also affect our control, our financial expectations. I don't feel the answer.
Which is the thing that is keeping it?
Because they are expanding and Alan Zeller said you're funding in the message. You must tell them before. That's it. You know, the good thing that we've got to bring for the PFI. talking about investments in outside of Africa and Africa that we've even come across on our visit to China about a bank that came and addressed the committee while we were in China, about the big investments over there and that. But it puzzles me that in South Africa they don't even want to invest in the small business, now the small SMEs and those type of things. They send these people to the DFI, send them back to the bank, and it's not that the banks are helping, we have a good business plan, we've got everything up to date, and nothing happened, nothing materialized, you know. So people are battling, I mean, clear people are battling to get loans and to get upstart loans from the banks in South Africa. And it puzzles me, it really bothers me. You know, I was talking to the governor of the Reserve Bank the other day, and I said, it sounds strange. It seems to me that somewhere or the other we have to have a review in terms of because the banks falls under the Reserve Bank. And that, so we'll have to look at maybe change the Reserve Bank Act or something to force the banks to come to the table and helping the ordinary South African that wants to start a business. You know, you get a guy that wants just 5,000 rand as a loan, a startup loan, 10,000 rand as a startup loan, and then the bank says, sorry, go to the DFI and say, or this or that is wrong, or that is wrong. The guy's got a credit card at the bank, he's got a motor vehicle loan at the bank, he's got a house loan at the bank, a bond loan. The bank just says, no, sir, we can't because it's the two of us to invest in your business. But they go outside the borders of South Africa and go and invest there. I mean, Standard Bank gave us a whole presentation in China. They are even prepared to invest in small companies in China, which they even haven't got the guarantee about. But in South Africa, they don't want to do these things. That bank rather wants to sell to HSBC, Hong Kong, Shanghai Bank. But in South Africa, in Cape Town and all the other provinces, they are not going to be prepared to help the small scale farmer, the small businessman that wants to get up. One thing I must say about FNB, I think on two occasions which I've dealt with them about small scale farmers, they've done that part. But let's hope they are not also going to sell out because they have been founded by South Africans and let's hope that they keep that South African spirit instead. But, I mean, we can clarify today the blaming between the DFIs and the commercial banks. Thank you.
I've just had a few comments. As you said, I don't want to ask questions. I feel like a very huge overdraft. You know, with the agency, there was an impression that was given to us that the 20%, of the 20%, I'll make an example. If they are building the airport in Uganda, I don't know whether it's in Canada or what it's in, then the company needs 10 billion. Then Standard Bank would say, we'll go to Africa because ICPC can't go to Uganda. Get somebody, now get the money. But it is said, the contract, the construction for that particular project will have to be done by the Chinese. How factual is that thing, you know? In other words, meaning the money just takes place. The bank will give us money, and also I still want to visit most of the projects in Africa, but they say, I haven't proven it. Those that are funded by Chinese, the Chinese contractors are always. That's what they say. But I haven't proven that. But I still want to, you know, visit just in September, quite a few countries. So China or ICBC would give us money. At the same time, whether it's a company from South Africa that gets a tender, but then must get a company from. That is why we are a bit puzzled when we discuss this. Because we want South African companies, when they get in, when they get a tenant, Secondly, with all the banks, do you have a clear plan, just as a financial institution, that now, whether you say you are racist or discriminatory, now we want to have that business against our plan to help them do business in Africa. Just a clear plan. Say, now, this is just targeting. Because one of the other things that we're going to do as a community, we're going to ask for reports of companies that are doing business in Africa and see who owns those companies. Are all the people of South Africa paying attention in our order? So that's another exercise that we're going to do. So the question to all the banks is, if we were to ask for this, all these things that they're doing, are you able to supply a solution to a shop right, owned by some commanders, assisting that this company owned by, but you are delivering, because you want to address the second issue, that the imbalance of the class. I don't know whether this might be a policy issue, but I want to find that from the bank. What do you find as a challenge in East Africa and North Africa? Why do you think all the institutions seem to be sharp? And I don't want to accept that a religion seems to be an issue. Because there are Muslims there, what have you. But you have to tell us what is the problem. Nobody is going towards the north. Nobody is going to the east. What's the problem? Lastly, are you prepared as financial institutions just to sit in one moment and say, let's look at Africa. As South African company, let us look at Africa. And then you approach the government or anybody and say, you know, as financial institutions, this is the pool that we have. Is there something that means the government needs to do in Africa that you can partner with government? So you are all together as financial institutions, you go to government, then a bank comes with 100 billion, the same with the other bank, so we have 400 billion. And then you go to government and say, this is what we have on Africa. What can government come up with so that we address issues on Africa? Are you prepared to do such a thing? If not, why not? If so, what's the plan? I don't know who will come first. It's up to you. Or whether you want to do the same sequence. Same sequence. How can you help us? That's a thing.
Thank you, Chair. If I may, my response to some of the questions, I think many of them were fairly general. I think today's mandate was really talking about trade into Africa, but there seems to be quite a few questions about the local side. I'd like to maybe just touch base on that. I think all the banks around the table here have really set up their businesses in South Africa according to segments. There's obviously the large corporate segment. The large companies with a turnover of more than 500 million rand. And then it goes down to medium businesses, smaller businesses, and we certainly have emerging market businesses, which is typically a business being launched in a million rand turnover. So I think all the banks are really geared up to assist the SMMD businesses and a specific segment that looks after that and is specific focus on that. Now, I'm not saying that segment specifically focused on whether it's black or whether it's white, but it's certainly focusing on the SMM business segment. So hopefully we'll see some substantial growth there. On the trading on the African side and helping people into Africa, I think, like I've said, it's very difficult in such a short time to really go into detail about the trade product and what it helps. Clients, but I mean certainly when clients do have opportunities to export into high-risk countries, the banks do have instruments and risk mitigants that can ensure that deals can be structured, can ensure that the
we do many of these small transactions. I mean, the bank is sitting around the table, certainly service the entire spectrum of businesses in South Africa. I mean, we deal from individuals right up to the large corporates and the large sectors. So I think it's just a question of engaging with the role players and engaging with clients. Clients need to sit down to the bank and say, this is exactly what I would like to do. I think all the banks here demonstrate that there's a huge keenness to grow trade into Africa, whether it's via other banks or via their own bank network, but I think that the desire is there to promote trade. I mean, the bank certainly not going to spend a fortune in putting up offices all over Africa and so we're not open for business. I think the banks are very, very keen to help people, and that includes small people, like small businesses. So, I mean, a lot of the transactions we do, it's certainly small transactions. Thank you. I hope that clarifies some of the questions. Maybe my colleagues will answer the rest of the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, to our bankers. As banks, when we look at the continent, we share the appetite for doing business on it. We straddle a fine line between meeting the expectations of our shareholders, the expectations of African government, and the agenda that is driving. The other challenge which we sit with is that when we look north to the countries, they've also got their own expectations. And they've got their own requirements, which we have to meet as well. We also have to look at the local community which you operate, the social responsibility which we as a bank take within those communities. How do we then work around it and try and meet the expectations of everyone? We look at the sectors which we target, for example, agriculture. Agriculture in Africa needs food security. The country is only secure when it feeds itself. If we look at the projects which we're focusing on, like, for example, Angola, AFRI, FA, one of our biggest customers, has signed 99-year leases with Angolan government. One of the conditions of the lease is that a portion of the projects has been to be developed in this bank of the project. And skills transfer, which happens from SA to Angola, is the stature of the Angolan government, for example, partially associated. If we look at communication and infrastructure development, we qualify for sustainable projects. In Mozambique, we're looking at the refinancing of the Cahora Bassa Dam, because we know that there is need for electricity. If we look at solutions, possible solutions, we should be looking at maybe we should combine it with the state of the government. It's more, with a lot of issues, it is a misalignment. So now we're searching for a strategic one between the SA government, the DFI, and us as that. A good starting point are the bilateral agreements, which are signed by the South African government between various countries like Angola, Zimbabwe, and Nigeria, to facilitate the trade. If we look at specific entities which have been set up, along project finance, there's the Pan-African Infrastructure Development Fund, otherwise also known as HARIF. We were looking at funding and taking equity in sustainable projects. It has been so successful, currently they've got assets of $500 million on their books. In line with that, we've been tasked by our CEO, Maria Ramos, to set up the equivalent of a housing project, a property finance division, along the same lines of the project finance. And finally, if we go back to the nuts and bolts of the numbers, we're trying to come up with a ROIC and a risk model which is suitable for doing business on the African continent. The challenges, the risks which we face on the continent are very somewhat different. One to be faced in South Africa, and we have to acknowledge that. And finally, Rome is not built in a day, and then we look north, we look at saying one country at a time.
Before you pass on, I want to tell you to Mr. Kusi, you left an interesting point about living in Zimbabwe and Australia, and being the last of the countries that have been, I know that that is the last letter. Has any specific reason why Zimbabwe or not Shaker?
in alphabetical order. There's no reason why Zimbabwe was last, but it's certainly one of the countries we identified where huge opportunities will be there going forward.
Mr. Chairman, this comment is because I think my colleague has addressed quite a bit of what I would have addressed in that part. But a couple of questions were asked, and I want to answer two in particular. One was about exchange control, and then you asked about monetary status. And I think the two, for the most part, are tied. If you look at the slide, you'll notice that the countries that South African banks have been going into have been operating, specifically being part of the South African development society. The reason for that is that under exchange control, exchange control, we're able to make investments in those countries a lot easier than we're able to make in other countries. So and that affects a lot of these South African companies, not just the banks. So I think all of the members have asked a question about exchange control. So I think this is a clear example of what limitation is based on South African data at this point to Africa. The other question you asked is all the banks speak about when you come together, put a pool of money together, and then come to the government. Mr. Chairman, you may be aware there is a process that DBSA, which I'm surprised I'm not here today, but are going through, where they are pretty much trying to create a public partner, public-private partnership of investment. Basically, here it's like putting a pool of money together and approaching the private banks to come in as partners in that fund. And also, we have quite a number of other funds which are not here today, like for in our case, the Pan African Investment Development Fund, where we have investment from DBSA and then money from the commercial banks coming together to invest into the rest of Africa. The last thing I wanted to comment on is that we talked quite a bit about the challenges and about the problems, and I think an honourable member did ask, what are we doing wrong? I think from the presentation this afternoon, it was quite clear to me that there are a lot of things that we are doing right. And I think at some point we need to ask ourselves, what are we doing right? And I think that it's clear that South African banks, in the realm of saying South Africa is the gateway to Africa, I think South African banks are doing that through action. That is, we are expanding to the rest of Africa, we continue to invest heavily into the rest of Africa, we are making the promise that South Africa ought to be the gateway to the rest of Africa. And the concern that members are expressing today about all the things we are doing in the rest of Africa as opposed to what we are doing in South Africa, I think really should be viewed more positively to say we are actually at the forefront of making South Africa the gateway to the rest of Africa. Thank you.
Gateway, if your own gateway is being debated and neglected. So how can you have a gateway? So I think the banks must get, because we are the lawmakers now, we are the ones who appeal to the lawmakers, that we should change the law to force the banks to let a road be built in one day. It's 16 years down the line. And we can't come up with any excuses to address anyone. I mean, the president made it clear, the government made it clear. 16 years down the line, what excuses can we come up? I mean, if people are suffering in South Africa, if people are battling to get access to the banks in South Africa, how can we be the gateway?
It can't be that in terms of ordinary people look. No, it can't. It's the wrong that you want.
Now you can speak without the mic.
Yeah. Okay. I hope everybody can hear me.
I hope you have not
the voice. I completely agree with what the honorable member just said. That you cannot go speak in other people's houses and you must agree. I completely agree with that. I think the key is two things. One, the program is chairman, what we were supposed to address today was in how we assist South African countries going to Africa. If we start with that topic,
95% of the council for us is our domestic one. So that's what we need to maximize and we always more than that.
I think to revisit the now that because of our involvement, we are trying to help them, you know, come up with some effective techniques. This is what one is trying to find out how, because they are business in the way. In GFC, as you said, now, you want to buy a house, you go and get some money, go and buy a property. There's no effective technique.
Jefferson, if I may respond to this question, and my second colleague don't mind, if I can respond to that.
When you deal cross-border, the trade instruments you use and the way you can use it is very different to domestic operations. For example, you can sell goods to a client overseas that you don't have a credit record or you don't know a lot about that client. But their bankers would, for example, issue a letter of credit to us, the bank. Now that letter of credit I use as security and as a payment obligation. And because I've got that payment obligation, I can then lend money to the local person here in South Africa. So it's very specific and very detailed, and I think my colleagues from Stanamac also refer to that. We can actually make sure that money can be advanced and you can get money earlier because we have a trade document from a bank in that particular country. So it's very specific, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because otherwise we talk a whole week about this, but it's a very particular instrument that we use to facilitate trade. Thank you.
Okay, my understanding is based on the letter of credit.
Yes.
Now, my question is, we're for the institutions here in South Africa that are supposed to be the credit guarantor. You know, how is it that now when we want to get some leverage from those credit guarantors, the banks would not, you know, negative access to the funding because
I think we do use them, but I mean when it gets to very specific, I mean they need to sit around the table. But the banks do use credit instruments in South Africa as well, yes, certainly. And some of the credit instruments come from the government. Like ECRC, people spoke about that this morning. I mean, that credit instrument that the banks will definitely use.
Can
I ask the gentleman to ask first?
Okay.
Yeah, I think the debate has been very healthy, and I think it's very important for us to put this on the all the banks, I mean, the way they've grown organically in the African countries is through the cheap sort of nation banking facilities. Mm-hmm. It's actually what we call armchair banking. Okay, they go in and make money off the top. Basically, the transactions are done at a corporate level. The people at the bottom, even in those countries, are not benefiting anything. Mm-hmm. So we are perpetuating the same type even in other African countries. So we're not doing anything new in those countries. I mean, there's a lot of things countries that are listed here in the JSC that are doing billions and billions of revenue profits, also benefiting from practices in those countries which are not in line with some of the imbalances that we're trying to reduce here. So what I'm saying is that there's a systemic issue, systemic problem that is being perpetuated in one form or the other in those other countries because we're not taking ownership or the core fundamental objective of trying to emancipate people at the bottom of the
pyramid. I think we are right. I agree with you. If you follow through and recall that was good, I said our assumption was certain South African companies will be in the economic colonization of Africa. That's the bottom line. So we're looking outward. We're still not looking inward. So because that's our discomfort. You are exactly right. If you go to any country where there is any South African, does their presence mean a better life to those inhabitants of those countries?
Yes.
So that's the line that we want to cross. Right? We shouldn't create any For me, I'm content. You know, when now I had that standard bank, so one would have thought Standard Bank is in China and is therefore assisting South African business people to get business in China. But it's not the case, you know. So that's why we are having this discussion. That is why we said, let's all come together and see. Because we might have unintended consequences in our dealings, in our trade in Africa. We might be ending up colonizing Africa economically. Because if we cannot leave the economy of that country and those people in power in that particular country, then it's not assisting. Then South Africa is helping in actually deploying them, to put it bluntly. So, but today, we're just discussing. In the next session, we'll come up and discuss and say, now we see these things are not going correctly. We're not do justice to South Africa and even to our African brothers. This is what we propose. We can change laws, we can make them. But today, it's just an open discussion. If there's no right, there's no wrong. We still discuss. But everything is done. Standard Bank, are you moving forward, making Africa to the world?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was worried you were using my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
sorry, Mr. Chairman, if I
I want to celebrate because it does it seem like a revolving celebration. I see the ladies that go to the police and they hate all the people did it or not.
One kind of policy. We have different policies in this field in the rest of the world.
understand very much. Another thing to end the history of my decision. Oh, this is a good
thing. So, I know you're running out of time. Ada only has asked that we all speak to say our names. My colleague is Sam Lambert, who is managing a place in Network Africa. I'm Kiran Zilagazi, I'm responsible for strategy in the afternoon. Some of us went to school and music. Basically, I don't want to make a general comment. The spirit that we come in here is to welcome anything that would actually assist us in doing our business better in Africa. Some of us seated here especially work in very challenging environments in Africa. I've worked in one of the poorest countries in Africa for about 5 years. That's what I've said. Since the 1890s, when Africa was not even advanced west, when people were not doing it. So some of us have got experiences that's on the ground, and a peculiarity that reminds us of our home. And so as corporate citizens, it's important for us to practice what we do at home, which is good, and we do it to others. The role of emphasis, I'm not going to answer on behalf of NEPEC, but from an industry point of view, policies like localization, which are taking place in most of our African countries, indigenization, and a whole lot of other transformative agendas that these countries have, require us as RSA corporate, banks included, to respond proactively to such. And there are examples, I must say, some of the institutions that here, including ourselves, will show you that we have empowered communities there, we have government ESOP schemes, we have actually advised government. You might have noticed the way the budget government is responding in terms of indigenization. We have certain things moving that are good for the good of all. Of us in the continent. The other point that I just wanted to touch on is that there is also, in terms of the broad-based economic empowerment of our own people, also in these countries, they are at an embryonic stage of localization. Because what happened, most of the countries that became independent in the 60s, they had to grab the economy in terms of what they had. But the companies that control most of the economy in the environment where we operate were government-owned entities that actually became the Anglo-Americans of those local communities in Africa. Can give you a whole lot of examples in the SIPC and even East Africa and North Africa, where you've got very big local companies that control the economy. They have not gone through the stage of unbundling and rebuilding the economic power to the local people. So what is critical for us is that when we invest as South African corporates investing in the continent, and we need to practice the policies that are good, and then where and undo those policies where we're not good. For instance, the colonial mentality that's spoken about and so forth. We cannot present ourselves in African countries as a no-off. In fact, to surprise of many people, when you get to these countries and you work, you are surprised by the level of sophistication of local communities about finance models, about trade, about big entrepreneurs, about moving goods. Some of the retail customers, they talk government bonds, treasury bonds, which our own local retail customers do not even know what it's all about. So there's a level of cross-pollination that can take place. But South Africa cannot share its responsibility. We have a responsibility as the most developed economy to actually make sure that when we come into this continental country, we practice what is there. So in short, we welcome the type of the debate. We cannot be seated here and think that we are beautiful. There might be some missing rough edges of ours as an industry and vice versa. Then, at least, we're not here to do that. and some of us have gone into banking, not as career bankers, but as people who want to change people's lives. And we have seen it in some environments, just like I want to assure you.
Thank you very much. Panel members, maybe
PFI, financial institutions, the department, the media that is here. I don't know if I don't remember. But thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen. This is